Hello, hello, hello. Hello, Georgians, hello, global citizens, and hello, concerned Americans. My name is Varun Kadathala, and I'm the current co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and my high school best friend Damian Galvin created in June of this year to talk about issues that interest us, issues that disgust us, and issues that America needs to know about. In other words, myself and Damian created this podcast to deconstruct public policy issues of the past and the present and create a more equitable future for all of us. We have a very, very special episode queued up for you guys, but before we play this episode, we're going to give a special thank you to our sponsor, Patreon, and our wonderful team here at Politician, which includes high school juniors Jada Pilling, Yi Shen, and Julia Hartman. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we hope that you enjoy. See you in the episode.
And we're rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Politician. My name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hey, listeners. My name is Varun Kadathala. As Damian said, I'm the co-host of the Politician podcast, which I host with Damian, our amazing guest today. Now, we're going to be talking about the outcome of this year's election with a predicted nominee for president, you know, the presidential, I guess, 2021. Our president will be Joe Biden. Sorry, that was so rough. But we do have Patrick Butler and Will Carroll on our podcast today. You guys know Will Carroll. He's our conservative correspondent, and Patrick's new to our podcast. So first of all, let's let Patrick introduce himself for all of our listeners.
I'm Patrick Butler. I'm doing all the marketing and everything for Politician. I'm helping manage that. Just kind of here to give my take on the election.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be an exciting conversation. This is going to be, I think, just an informal switch, as we were kind of talking about with Politician. We had the live stream about the election and stuff, and that was actually a lot of fun. And I really liked how we carried ourselves through that live stream, and I would love to just bring that to every single episode. But yeah, Patrick has been helping us with the team. He's like our flex player. He's like our CEO, our chief of staff. He's everything. He's our flex player. He'll just go into quarterback, wide receiver, wherever we need him. He'll just be there. But Will's a reoccurring guest. I don't think Will likes introducing himself anymore. I think I can introduce Will for Will. Will will say, if you don't know him, go watch the past episodes with him. Besides that, he's conservative, and that's about it.
That's it. Yeah.
there's not much. You guys know enough about Will by the end of today's episode.
Your audio just got super. Your audio just got super boomy, man.
I apologize, my friend. I will stop talking for a minute.
Oh man.
How do I sound?
There you go. We're good.
Am I good?
You're good, Will. Okay. Before we were starting the podcast, we were trying
podcast, and we were having an amazing conversation about sound. Anyways, let's talk about the election.
Now you're a little quiet, man. Turn it up.
Quiet?
Yeah. Right.
No.
Keep talking about sound. Am I good now? Is my sound okay?
Yeah, you're solid. Yeah, we'll go with. Yeah, you're good.
So let's talk politics. Let's talk Politician. So how are we feeling about this year's election? We're seeing that Joe Biden is the presumptive president. I did that well this time. He's the presumptive president for 2021 up until 2020, I guess, 2024. So how are we feeling about the overall odds of this election, the process, and how it went around? Let's ask, I guess, we'll ask Will first. How do you feel?
I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed because I was wrong. I'm less disappointed about the fact that Trump lost. I'm more disappointed that I was wrong. Is that it wasn't like 2016. We saw voter turnout that we haven't ever seen. We've the largest voter turnout in history. Joe Biden, by the AP, is reporting 75.4 million votes, and Donald Trump reported 70.9 million votes, which is, for Joe Biden, that's the most votes anyone has ever gotten in this country, and for Donald Trump, the most votes a sitting president has ever gotten. So I think that this year, and I think Varun might have said this, but I think like on the live stream, but I think this year America really won, in the sense of how we got like 140 million people as opposed to the 120 last year or last election who voted. So I think that that really shows that people are really like understanding that, you know, your vote counts. Everyone's vote counts, and that really showed out in this election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, And that's what, you know, Damian keeps saying that. I mean, I say it sometimes, but Damian kind of began that quote of America won, America continues to win, and I hope that we win for the next 4 years. Anyways, I think that beyond that, I mean, even President Trump got the second most votes ever gotten by a candidate. So I think the voter turnout on both ends was absolutely phenomenal. I saw a lot of absentee voting, even though the Republicans kind of died down on that, pushed down on absentee voting and told people to go in person. I saw a lot of GOP absentee voting. I did see a lot of concerns about the election process this year as well. So, you know, we posted a picture on the Instagram for you guys who don't follow us, which had just a picture of President-elect Joe Biden, and how it said 46th president of the United States, presumptive. And people were in the comment section being like, no, the election was rigged and Trump won the election. And I was absolutely, I think personally, I was disappointed that our democracy is being admonished like that. I mean, Trump came out and talked about how, you know, yesterday, I believe, and a couple of days ago, talked about in a press conference about how the Dems had stolen this election from him and it was a bad process and a flawed process. And I think that the big takeaway from this is that every single time that he puts out this allegation or a video or a certain quote, every single one of them gets, you know, debunked. And so me and Damian were talking about this before. And whenever you have a certain claim from the Republicans, we can always find a quick and apt answer from the Democrats. So I think that a lot of it is actually just it's anti-democratic is what I think. Any thoughts on the whole situation in terms of Trump going out and doing that kind of stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. It's extremely anti-democratic, and I think that we should just leave it at that. I don't think that it should be given any more attention. I don't think that media outlets are giving it any more attention because of the fact that they're just blatant lies. As Will said, we had the highest voter turnout. Ironically, you know, it's never to rub a loss in someone's face, but Donald Trump lost by the biggest margin in the popular vote that anyone has ever lost by. And he's America's biggest loser. He's the biggest losing president in American history. And that's the simple fact. There was no voter fraud that's been proven yet. And all these claims are falsehoods, and they're an embarrassment to the United States. They're an embarrassment to the democracy. You know, what was it? I guess it was Friday. Friday, the American flag got a new meaning. The American flag can be waved with pride again and with honor. And, you know, we can say what you want about policies. We can say what you want about the Supreme Court or this or that. Or at the end of the day, Donald Trump was a bad person. And I don't think that that I have any shame in saying that or any regret in saying that. And obviously, you know, I always have to remind myself and I have to remind the viewers that I'm centrist. I don't have any, you know, opposition to necessarily the policies. I'm inclined to listen to policies from both perspectives and from both sides and really vote or opinionate myself with what I believe is right. But one thing that I cannot opinionate myself was with flying an American flag with pride, you know, saying that that's the flag of democracy. That's the flag of leadership. That's the flag that shall represent the world, what it means to be a free country when we have kids in cages, when we have a president making fun of our troops. You know, you can say that it's not true, but we saw him, you know, do it to John McCain in front of everyone. I'm not necessarily talking about the article that came out from The Atlantic saying that he called, you know, you know, deceased veterans and people who have served losers and suckers. You know, whether that's true or not, we don't even need to turn to that. We can just turn to the fact that he did it on national television. He said that he liked heroes that weren't captured. And that's just disrespectful. And I think Arizona, you know, with all due respect to kind of the attitude that we keep here on the podcast, gave Donald Trump a big middle finger. And they disrespected one of Arizona's heroes, and Arizona showed them what it means to, you know, to do that. And I think America showed the president what it means to do that. And this past week, they said, "You're fired," to the sitting president of the United States of America.
Well, look, I talked about this on the live stream we had on Election Day. It was absolutely phenomenal. For any of you guys who didn't watch it, we had a good time. Me, Will, Damian. I think even Patrick came on for a couple of minutes here and there, but it was a good live stream. I talked about the fact that in Arizona, I thought they would go Democratic, which they did, because they elected John McCain. And first of all, they were kind of moderate in doing so. And also, I think that they were appalled by the president coming out and saying, you know, John McCain, I prefer soldiers who didn't get caught. Right. And that's coming from a guy who evaded service. So it's something that you have to consider when you go to this election. But I wanted to talk about a contrast between before. right? And Joe Biden yesterday made an amazing speech. I thought it was amazing to the American people, which was a very big contrast from what we've ever seen from a president, a Democratic or Republican. He said, "I ran as a proud Democrat. I will now be an American president. I will work as hard for those who didn't vote for me as those who did vote for me." And that's a quote. So I think that what that does is it cements the idea that we must you know, embrace our enemies. And he said that in his whole speech. He said, embrace our enemies. And I think that with the polarization, the sheer partisanship and polarization of this today's political climate, that's a much needed, you know, a much needed phrase. I think we should pray for our enemies. I think we should work together for compromise.
I think he used the word opponents, just to clear that up. Opponents. Yeah, he said that
they weren't our enemies. Exactly. Yeah. That's my fault completely. Thank you, Damien. But I think the big takeaway here is that we have to work together towards compromise. And with a Republican, I think projected Republican Senate, that's going to be a necessity for President Biden. Let's talk about just the idea that he put out yesterday. I think it's a good point of conversation today because you look at what Barack Obama had back in 2008 when he first won, and it kind of, you know, matches the tone of today in the fact that we're not red states, we're not blue states, but we are the United States of America. I think Joe Biden made a similar claim, a similar appeal to the American people, and I think that kind of changed some minds. I saw on Twitter a bunch of Republicans, a bunch of my friends coming out and saying, that's something that I respect about this new president-elect, and it's something that I think will unify Americans as we go forward, with Joe Biden being a historic compromise maker. And gaining the respect of even Republican politicians like Mitch McConnell. So what are our thoughts? What are our thoughts on the right wing? Patrick, you want to head us up?
What's that say? You kind of cut out a little bit for me. My internet's having issues.
No worries. No worries. I guess I'll just hand it off to Will. What do you think about what I just said if I didn't cut off with you?
No, you didn't. You didn't. I'm all good. And when I heard Joe Biden say that, I thought two things. First and foremost, I thought it was pretty corny, but at the same time, I respected the hell out of it because, you know, that takes a lot. Trump would never say that. Donald Trump would never say that. But to have Joe Biden say that, even if you didn't vote for me, I think that says a lot about the type of president not the type of president that people think he's going to be, but the type of president that he actually is. And I think in these next 4 years, I think we're going to really see if, you know, Joe Biden's been in public service for 47 years. We're going to see if once he's finally president, he can do something. And I'm hoping he can. I'm hoping he can do something.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think that what you were saying there was you said it was corny, and Rune was like, I remember after the speech was going, Rune was like, oh man, wasn't that an awesome speech? I was like, hell no, it wasn't. That was such a normal speech.
I know.
It was so lame. I absolutely loved it. I was like, it was so basic. It was so simple. It was so, and I was like, I loved it. I died for it. Like, you know what I'm saying? We've just been missing that for the past 4 years. There was no slander. There was no false claims. There was no need to fact check anything he said because he didn't say anything that needed fact checking. It was just a simple statement that unified people, and it was so boring and so normal and so basic, and it's what the democracy has been missing. It just feels like what needs to be said. It's about damn time.
Yeah. Look, I think that in terms of normalcy, I texted Damien about this earlier. Again, we're having these conversations off the podcast, but I texted him earlier and I talked about how Donald Trump had a press conference, Rudy Giuliani did, with the Trump campaign outside of this place called the Four Seasons Manufacturing, whatever it is, warehouse, right? They meant to book the Four Seasons Hotel, but they accidentally booked a manufacturing warehouse in the middle of, you wouldn't believe it, but a crematorium, I believe, and a adult video store. And that's where the Trump campaign held its press conference today amidst a slew of allegations against Democrats for rigging the election, so-called. And so it kind of represents the clown circus that I think that I'm not using that quote for myself. That's from Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman from Pennsylvania, a clown circus that it's been over the past 4 years. I think that we need a politician, right? And Trump ran on the premise of, I am not a politician. I came into here as an American citizen, a person who does not kind of conform to Washington. And he came in and he did exactly that. He didn't conform to a single thing that American people wanted of him. His mandate that as Joe Biden mentioned, of the American people, of Washington. I think that he was so much of a non-politician that he was a bad president in his pursuit of just being apolitical. And I think that Joe Biden coming out there and being the most politician-like person, you know, being in politics, as you mentioned, Will Carroll, 47 years, that kind of substantiates that political atmosphere. So I think we needed that, Damian. And he only, the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway here is that he only mentioned the word Donald Trump, I believe, one time.
Yeah.
And so and he kind of touched over the idea that you mentioned it, Damian. You mentioned the fact that they're contesting the election and we shouldn't recognize that. And Joe Biden did exactly that, right? He didn't recognize the fact that there were people in this nation not recognizing his presidency. Now, the biggest takeaway here is how much flack George W. Bush got from the right for recognizing his presidency, right? There was a Trump campaign manager who came out and said, George W. Bush knows a lot about cheating, right? And he's trying to maybe even substantiate the fact that Al Gore won the 2000 election. And so there's people just coming out and throwing jeers and stuff on George W. Bush for even recognizing the president. And so it shows the sheer partisanship that I think that I hope that Joe Biden can reform. And it's going to take a lot, guys, for Joe Biden to fix the partisanship in America. But I think that has to be his first kind of goal as president of the United States. And I think that's going to be his defining moment. If he can do that, then we can create change. But if not, we're in for another 4 years of just politics and Congress under that dome not working together. And that's just scary 4 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, just checking here because Patrick did leave to change his hotspot. Patrick, are you back? Okay, awesome. So for any of our guests that are wondering, Patrick is not back. That's why he hasn't been talking. We just haven't been ignoring him. I think that it's been time that we've kind of been missing a politic. Well, what do you think about, because I know that you're conservative in the sense that you would vote for someone like George W. Bush had they ran, and you would have put your unequivocal support behind them, some of a candidate like Mitt Romney. What I deem a true a true conservative, a true Republican. So what do you think about two things? What do you think about, obviously Bush putting, it's not even his support, it's just Bush kind of going on with the democratic process and congratulating the president-elect. And then second of all, what do you think about Trump's family telling him, hey, it's time to quit? I mean, you had Jared Kushner telling him, it's time to concede, man. You had, you had Melania. You had his wife telling him, Donald, it's time to go.
Look, I think it just shows this is a good and bad thing, but it shows how persistent the president is. And it shows, how dedicated he is to furthering his agenda. And yeah, that's great, but also you need to know when to quit. You need to know when you finally have to say, I lost. And I don't think he's ever going to do that. Sure, he will, he'll leave. And there are rumors that he goes home at Christmas and he doesn't come back. But I think often about what Hillary Clinton said in 2016 at the debate, or one of the debates, where they said, She said, I think it'd be terrifying if Donald Trump didn't accept his defeat, if she won. And I think it's even more terrifying because he is the president now. So, and they're saying, he's saying, we'll take it to court. We're taking it to court. I don't think that's going to do anything. That's not going to do anything.
Yeah.
I highly doubt it. So just not speaking from a Republican standpoint, not speaking from a Democratic standpoint, speaking as from an American standpoint, it's really terrifying to see the president not conceding when he knows he lost. Everyone else knows he lost. People in other countries know he lost, and he still won't concede.
Yeah.
And look, it's not just from an American standpoint, right? And that's all good and well, but then you have Emmanuel Macron, Boris Johnson, one of the president's most, closest allies internationally, Donald Tusk, people like this from across the world coming out and saying congratulations to our next foreign ally, Joe Biden. And part of it is because they kind of know him, because he was under 45 or under 44. Barack Obama, he was pretty active internationally with foreign policy. They knew him. But I think that now everybody is accepting Donald Trump's loss except for Donald Trump. I want to pull up a – and I think that more than persistent, personally, I think that it's self-promoting and shunning the American people's word. Because Joe Biden mentioned this. We gave him a mandate, right? The people of this nation, no matter what, you know, political party, race, creed, you gave him a mandate by electing him president. And so when you deny the existence of that democratic mandate, it becomes a problem. And Donald Trump, I want to pull up a quote. I retweeted this earlier because I saw it on my Twitter feed. He said, back in September 20th, 2014, I know you saw it. It said, what separates the winners from the losers is how a person reacts to each new twist of fate. And he said, what separates the winners from the losers is how a person reacts to each new twist of fate. I think his reaction.
That's really deep. I wonder who he stole that from.
He stole it from Michelle Obama's speech.
That was his wife. Remember? That was his wife.
Oh, I'm getting them all mixed up. what did you guys think about the NFL? The SNL skit? Did you guys watch it?
Nope.
I didn't watch the SNL skit. Okay. I got too much
Which one? There's been a couple really funny ones.
The one where it was like Joe Biden's victory speech. Yeah, Patrick's back. The one with Joe Biden's victory speech.
No, I didn't see it.
You didn't see that one? That was funny, where like Trump starts playing the piano and stuff and like talking about how he's like a real man.
You know what, man? I'm imagining this. My mind is running right now. I got you.
It's absolutely hilarious. Jim Carrey does an amazing job with.
I did see Jim Carrey's Joe Biden. That was really funny.
Yeah, he does an amazing job with Joe Biden. Then there was the Wolf Blitzer impersonation, which I thought was absolutely hilarious. They made fun of like Wolf Blitzer's beard. But yeah, I think that it's a little bit overdue that he does not concede. He's not a good loser.
Of course not.
I mean, he still hasn't conceded the fact that in what it was the 1970s, right, when there was the Central Park Five, and they were, you know, five kids between the ages of 14 and 16 were falsely accused of a rape. Donald Trump pulls an ad out in a newspaper, calls for the death penalty it was Central Park Five. No, sorry. Why? That was stupid. It was five. You know, he calls for the death penalty to be put upon five kids. He says, bring back the death penalty. DNA evidence years after these kids have been convicted, and had Donald Trump's newspaper ad come into fruition and the death penalty had been brought back, they would have been found guilty with the death penalty. But years later, someone comes up and says that they actually committed the rape, and DNA evidence shows that they did, that they were actually the ones at fault for the rape. So DNA evidence overturns the Central Park Five case, and they are all, you know, exonerated and pardoned. And they're awarded, I think, like $46 million. And Donald Trump still to this day says that they were guilty.
Yeah.
I think he just has too much pride to acknowledge he was wrong.
I think it's honestly, we've been seeing it. It's kind of a trend we've been seeing over the past couple of months, past couple of years. It's saddening. Like I talked about, there's a mandate you get.
Hold on, your audio is cutting out there, Varun.
Your is it cutting out all you guys?
Yeah, it's chopping up for me. What is it for you, Patrick?
No, he's sagging here.
Okay.
He's choppy for me too.
He's choppy for you, Will.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Awesome.
I guess audio issues. Am I good now?
No. You're still like you're like chopping up. Your audio is just chopping up a little bit. I don't know how to explain it.
Right, go ahead.
Yeah. No. What I was gonna say was Patrick mentioned pride, and I just don't think that pride and democracy really mix well, right?
No. It absolutely doesn't.
Like I think
it doesn't belong in politics.
Yeah. But like pride. But the thing, you know, as it. There's a certain level. You know what I think it is? I think it's the fact that he has no honor. And that's the difference. Because I think that a lot of I retract my statement. I think that a lot of politicians have pride. I think there's things to have pride in, right? There's things that you can be proud of your nation. You can have pride in your nation, as Joe Biden does. You can have pride in your roots, as Joe Biden does. You can have pride in the man that you've become, in the family that you've raised, in the nation that you've led. You can have pride in all those things. You can have pride in the mistakes that you've made and the corrections that you're going to make in the future. You can have pride in the people that you've been empathetic and sympathetic with. But when you don't have honor, you have pride in the moments that you have been wrong. And you have too much pride to admit the fact that you have been wrong. And in those moments and those testaments, those are the testaments to your character, to the person that you are inside your chest, inside your heart. When you can't, denounce white supremacy on the spot, when you have to go and say that five African-American teenagers, didn't mention that, but five African-American teenagers should be sentenced to death. And then, beyond all evidence, you still say that they should be killed. To not be able to admit that you were wrong in any case under any circumstances, to not be able to acknowledge the fact that you lost, that does not belong in democracy, right? You have to be able to admit that you're not the best in order to be a successful politician. It's still a little choppy for me, but Will, what's your response to kind of the whole ordeal here?
The whole ordeal of pride, right?
Yeah, pride.
Well, I think you set up pretty plain and clear. Pride doesn't belong in politics. There's an echo going on. I think that's Varun.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Varun, you're echoing up a little bit.
Hello.
You're good. You're good.
Right, he's good. I don't want to hear myself twice. Yeah, I think as a politician, I think if you have pride, you can have pride in your country, your son, but having pride in yourself as a politician, you have to be focused more on people always say look out for number one. You can't look out for number one, because when you're a politician, your country is number one. It doesn't matter if you're city council member, and it doesn't matter if you're the president of the United States. Your country, or your county, or your state, your district is number one. And I think that's what's really going to separate Joe Biden and Donald Trump in these next 4 years compared to the last 4 years. It's really going to separate.
I think as a politician, you have to be willing to set your personal pride and your ego and everything aside. It's not about you. You have to be able to, you're in office as a public service to serve the people of your district, your constituents. And when you let your pride and your ego and your reputation, whatever, get in the way, you're doing a disservice to your constituents, and you're not getting what needs to be done. And it's not why you're there. And it ruins the entire purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because I guess the biggest complaint from Republicans over the past 4 years, and I guess over the past 6 years, since I guess you can consider him running as part of him being on the national spotlight, but it was just the fact that he wouldn't shut up. And at first it was on Twitter, and then we saw the debates, and it was like, man, could he just shut up in real life? And then, right. Now we're looking at the news conferences, and it's like, man, he just could not shut up. Because, you have to compare what Joe Biden, just the whole speech that Joe Biden gave, the victory speech that he gave, just kind of overshadowed every other press conference that Donald Trump's had. Someone can correct me when I'm wrong. Even when they killed al-Baghdadi, that speech, the speech given when al-Baghdadi had been killed was an embarrassment. And you guys can go and listen to that on your own time. You can compare that to when we killed Saddam Hussein under the Obama administration, or when we killed bin Laden, rather, under the Obama administration. And you can compare those speeches. It's just, every single speech that Biden had given kind of got overshadowed, or every single speech that Trump had given had kind of gotten overshadowed by what Biden said. I think that you just have to be able to put your pride aside for your constituents. I remember that HW, he was the last president to serve only one term, And he, when he lost, I mean, he put the nation on his back in the process of transitioning. But just to move on to a different topic here, let's talk about the suspension of habeas corpus. The right to criticize the government. It was suspended during the Cold War. That's the last time it was suspended. It was suspended during the Civil War. And basically it does not allow news media to criticize the sitting president of the United States of America. And it basically just tries to bring together everyone to unify them. Freedom of speech has been oppressed in this country two times that I've recalled right now, during the Cold War and during the Civil War. But we've never seen it be the other way around. We've never seen the media just tell the president to shut the hell up. I mean, it's like, it's kind of the Joe Biden moment in the debate where it's like, will you shut up, man? And it was just this moment where I don't remember what news outlet it was, but I was watching the news and Donald Trump comes out to give a press conference and they just cut it off. Like, we're just not going to show you that because it's just not true. And it was like this.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Go for it. You're still robotic to me.
How about anybody else?
Yeah.
Will, yeah, what do you have to say about kind of the reverse suspension of habeas corpus?
I thought I was going to be asked about Varun's mic. Varun, your mic is still god awful, but
I hope. Let me just get out my mic. One second. One more mic for Varun.
Varun's having all the technical
difficulties. Is my thing okay now?
Yeah.
Grab a screwdriver.
No, it's not.
It's getting better, but it's not. It's still not.
Can we cut to an ad break?
And you, yeah, well, yeah, yeah, we can, yeah, we can cut to an ad break real quick. Let's figure.
All right, guys, that was probably our best advertisement, probably ever. So congratulations to Damien for that amazing advertisement. I am back from my mic difficulties, and I wanted to say, well, actually, it's kind of oddly placed, but let's move on to something that I thought was really cool, something I thought was really funny and honestly immature. So the Trump HQ, the headquarters, put out a bunch of newspapers today outside of their headquarters, and they had the caption of "Al Gore wins the election" from the Washington Post, the Washington Times, and it was some kind of fake headline. Because when you looked into it, as like onlookers looking into it, it basically said right under that George W. Bush won the election. And it was a fake headline, a fake newspaper article, pasted outside of the campaign headquarters walls. And so it kind of, I thought it showed the amount of misinformation going on around the nation and that the president's basically promoting. So I think that it becomes an issue of the character of this nation, our love and our appreciation of truth and honesty in this nation. I mean, I think that setting an example wise. To our next generation, we have to understand that this president, in his role, his number one responsibility, I believe, is transparency to the American people. And when he signs up for the job, he or she signs up for the job, his number one responsibility is transparency to the American people. And when the person in that position not only is not transparent, but blatantly lies, promotes disinformation to the American people, it becomes a problem for me. So I think that what we have to do is crack down upon the pervasiveness of truth decay in this nation from the right and the left and promote independent fact-checking, independent research, independent analysis. And I think that it begins, guys, with dropping the label. Right. And this is something that Joe Lieberman puts out a lot as his ideology. It's the idea that we shouldn't be driven by exactly the same party motives as our political parties. Whatever our party does, we should do. I think we have to think on our own. And have our own decisions, our own votes, our own thoughts. I think we should be vote with our conscience, like Ted Cruz says back in 2016. And I think we have to drop the label and understand what this democracy needs, which is truth and independent research, independent studies. And that's going to create compromise, which I believe is going to just bolster this democracy and what we can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If we want to talk about compromise, I think someone, this is Joe Biden's episode. Congratulations to the president-elect Joe Biden. I don't think we've even said that yet, but congratulations to the president-elect Joe Biden. Hopefully in this moment, where this country is in pain, frankly, you know, some of our you know, our brothers and sisters are dead. You know, they're being buried because of this virus that's ravaging communities. And you know, there's this hyperpartisanship and this age of you know, kind of truth decay that Varun was talking about. And what we need is someone that can bring us together and someone that can unify. And I think that, you know, hopefully, you know, the 46th president of the United States, Joe Biden, can do that. But I think that he has a proven record of being able to do it, and we just need to give him time. But we have to talk about what the Republican Party, because, you know, we were talking about compromise. We have to talk about the Republican Party is going to be willing to give up in order for Joe Biden to be successful. But before we can even talk about that, we have to talk about a crucial Senate race here in Georgia.
Two.
There you go. Two. Yeah. That's, I mean, this is, the severity of these Senate races could determine the future of our democracy in every single literal sense. I mean, to put these in perspective, these two Senate races would tie the Senate. If Democrats win them, then the Senate is at 50-50, which means that the Senate is Democratic because Kamala Harris would be presiding over. She would be the president of the Senate, which means that she would have the tie-breaking vote. So it would, you know, it would be in favor of the Democrats. Also, something side note, just here. Did you ever think about the fact that the founding fathers absolutely did not want that? Because the idea was that when, you know, whoever lost the election would be the vice president. So Donald Trump would have been the vice president right now. So there would have still been a balance of power because, for example, Republicans, if there would have been a tie, the tiebreaker would have been the Republican. Or the one that didn't preside to, or didn't wasn't in the party of the president, so that more bills would favor, or more legislation would favor the opposing party, and there would just be a system of checks and balances. But that's just something to look at. After, you know, obviously that we don't do the vice presidents like that anymore. But here in Georgia is the center of political attention right now.
Yeah, if I could interject here for a minute, for a couple of things. Number one, I had a conversation with Brad, our other conservative correspondent, and he was talking about how weird would it be to have Joe Biden as our president and Donald Trump as our vice president. Like, how absolutely insane would that be? I don't think Donald Trump would accept the job. I think he would plot for the murder of Joe Biden, which is not unrealistic. It is a far-fetched. I'm just kidding, guys. I'm just kidding.
Can we say that? You're fine, man. We're just messing with
okay.
you.
Okay, I think we're I'm okay. I'm making a joke, guys. I'm sorry.
Secret Service is currently looking for Varun.
Guys, if that wasn't taken as a joke, I mean, I get it, but I'm sorry. Anyway,
no, you want to know the thing? The fact that there's a possibility that some people did not take that as a joke is to the utmost concern, and probably the reason anyway. That he lost the election.
Let's set it straight. Let's set it straight. Yeah. If you didn't take that as a joke, leave the country.
Go.
Seriously. It was a joke. It was funny.
All right, guys. I'm absolutely sorry for that. Anyways, let's talk realism here. Let's talk about what Damian said about women and how the founding fathers did not want the vice president to be selected like this. I think that beyond that, you know, remembering Abigail Adams and remember the ladies, they didn't want a woman to be in any position of power back when they wrote the Constitution. It wasn't conceivable, right?
No.
And her, Kamala Harris, coming up to the job of vice president is absolutely incredible because I was talking about it before. Abigail Adams, remember the ladies. She talked about how you must not forget the ladies in writing this Constitution, this Declaration of Independence, right? And we progressively just forgot the ladies. You know, how hard it was for RBG to come out as a Supreme Court justice. It was extremely, extremely difficult. So I think that the women have been making a slow and steady rise to power to, you know, come to their rightful position in democracy, come to the rightful position in society. So I think that her becoming the vice president is something that we can all look up to.
Now
you know, man or woman, whatever race you're a part of, whatever sexual orientation you're a part of, that's an achievement. The first South Asian,
we'll see what happens with Trump,
you know, vice president of the United States, going to be the first African American vice president of the United States.
A lot of people are a lot less
first woman vice president. So it's a lot of things that Kamala Harris brings to the table.
It's good to see.
Even Joe Biden said this before, he's going to represent America in his cabinet.
I work in a restaurant. He's going to represent whoever, a lot of our customers, you know, our entire nation's over the makeup. Last
so I think the diversity is the promise of this administration, as it was the promise of 44.
Ridiculous.
If I can interject here, because I want to ask Will a question. There's a lot of contact.
As like a staff,
you know, it's devastating. And I think that Politine is going to have a shift. You know, people were telling me what would be the best thing that would happen if Donald Trump won free energy. Politine would just have a lot more news. We just have a lot more stuff to talk about every single week.
Believe it or not, that's exactly what I said.
I think I know where the direction you're going.
Now that it's all over and it's come to an end. People are just, they're so less stressed out. It's over. All that tension is let go.
Isn't the goal of the media? I've heard anxiety about it. Well, I'm going to quote on
people might not
say
this.
The goal of the media is to criticize the president.
I think as a whole, like as a country, and I saw a post we're not all stressed really, about, okay, who's winning, what's happening, is there cheating, what's going on? Because there's all these things floating around.
It was someone saying,
and as you kind of see that start to dwindle down and go back to normal, I think as the population, everybody becomes
actions, his actions
American,
accountable.
And just as like Damien said, over the live stream, God, you guys streamed for hours.
He's not a god. He's
we'll
not
wake up American king. Tomorrow.
He doesn't have absolute power.
We're all, the people have the right to, for the most part.
You know, we're going to hold him accountable, and we are going to make sure he does what we, the people, want. So I think that, you know, I hope we'll continue to see that from not just this media outlet, but hopefully from other major media outlets. Like I'm sure Fox is going to do it, but I'd also like to see CNN talk about, you know, if Joe Biden had an opportunity to do something and didn't, or, you know, he handled a situation less than perfect, then, you know, yeah. But, you know, I think that the goal of the media is to criticize the president. And, you know, I've said this before. Yes, I think the media should also report some good things, but ultimately media it's private business, privately owned. The government does not control the media. Habeas corpus should not be suspended ever, because that's, you know, it's not the first. That's the first.
First
that's
right
number
the
one on the Bill of Rights. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So
don't ask Amy Coney Barrett, because she might not remember it.
I don't know if that'll be taken as a joke, Damon. If mine wasn't taken as a joke, I don't know how that's going
to
be taken.
That one was not a joke.
Hers was the right to protest. That's still really important right now. That is still really important right now. But
let's let Patty speak.
What were you saying, Patrick?
Go ahead, Patrick.
She's like, oh yeah, that one. Yeah.
Especially now.
No.
And
I mean,
not even just the idea of her forgetting an amendment, but it's the idea of her forgetting the right to protest, guys. Like, we're in 2020. How hard is that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's kind of like, you know, just like maybe like the Boston Tea Party, or like, I don't know, like the Boston Massacre, or like, you know, just kind of how the country got founded. Like, totally not, you know, like
or anything in the past, right? 5 months.
To like, you know, the like, you know, the civil rights movement, or like the Women's March, or the women's rights movement, or like women's suffrage or male suffrage. It's just totally, none of this has anything to do with the thing that she forgot. Or maybe what happened after. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think it takes preparation.
She did. I think she had one keynote response. It was, I can't answer that because it might come up in a future case.
That's the staple of what we hear during the SCOTUS hearings. But I think that upon your previous point, guys, I mean, Damien, I think that we have to be as hard upon Joe Biden as we've ever been. Personally, I was hard on Obama. I was hard on Bill Clinton when I heard about what he did with crime, right? I think that Obama and Bill Clinton were terrible for crime, expounding upon our rates of crime in this nation. in terms of like, you know, nonviolent crime arrests. I think they were bad for the crime atmosphere here. So I think that I always have I've spoken about doing independent research and things like that. I think it's important for you to look at what actually happened behind a bill. Find independent research firms. Find the right wing and the left wing. Find both sides of the issue and figure out for yourself what you believe in, guys. Because right now, information media bias, fact truth decay is so rampant to where we can't decide even for ourselves if we wanted to what is a good policy and what isn't a good policy, right? So I think it takes the media to direct people towards, you know, two sides of an issue. Be bipartisan, guys. Do your own research. Me personally, I've done research for Politine. I'm a 94 crime bill. I agree with some parts. I don't agree with some parts. And that's been part of my scrutiny towards Joe Biden. Beyond that, Obama administration policies on the H1N1 pandemic. I agree with some of it. Don't agree with some of it. So I think that it takes that extra step of independent research to figure out for yourself what you want of your president and make your mandate fulfill its true promise. I'm going to quote Joe Biden there, but we're not going to lay off on President Biden. Mark my words here. I said it here. It's going to stay here.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing, though, Will, I was going to ask you this earlier because we were talking about Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. A big criticism that I've seen is because, you know, obviously the fact that something that I think a lot of people forget was that Obama wasn't, with all due respect to President Obama, Obama wasn't the first black president. He wasn't. He was the first mixed president. He was not fully African. He did not come from two African-American parents. And that's not to disrespect him. That's just to say that the country, you know, the country still has strides to make. We still have to make those efforts, forward. But a big criticism that I've seen of Kamala Harris being made is the fact that generationally speaking, there's been allegations, and I don't know, I haven't looked at them, but the fact that she is not, they're not considering her the first African on the right, that is, they're not considering her the first African-American. Obviously, just to go back on what I'm saying, Obama was the first African-American president. What I'm saying is that he was not, he was not fully 100% African-American. You have to
remember that's a conversation, though. Yeah. Is multiracial right. Considered yes. African-American?
Yeah.
That's a whole conversation.
But on having that conversation, a lot of people said that she is not African-American because of the fact that, or she's not considered black because of the fact that generationally speaking, there's been allegations that her ancestors owned slaves. Is that important?
Did her ancestors own slaves?
Again, let's go with that.
No, it's not about that. Well, let's just say hypothetically.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Yeah, go ahead, Patrick. Okay, let's say hypothetically her ancestors did own slaves. That doesn't change anything about her. Does she think she should own slaves? No. Does it matter that she was the first, like that she's the first African-American? Of course she's the first African-American woman to be elected vice president, and the first woman to be elected vice president. I think that, you know, I'm trying to word it correctly, but with all due respect, and this is mainly just shouting out, like, or this is calling out, like, Republicans, like, who the hell cares? Like, she's not her ancestors. Like, you don't go around people, like, to people's houses in Alabama and South Carolina and be like, oh, did your ancestors own slaves? Like, they didn't, like that doesn't change the fact that, like, there are Democrats today, or like there are very, I guarantee there are very far, far left Democrats today whose ancestors own slaves and they didn't even know it. That doesn't make them any less of a bad person or any less of a good person. It doesn't matter what your ancestors did. Your ancestors don't shape the person you are today. And I think that
there's a lot of Democrats. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that the person that you can be today is not shaped by your ancestors. Obviously, it has an effect if you're going to talk about like systematic stuff. Like, you know, if your ancestors were poor, obviously you're more likely to be poor. But like that's another discussion to have for another day. But the thing that I was getting to was this picture that I want to buy, right? It's this big, it's not the one of Obama smoking weed, even though that's a good one to buy. But it was a picture of Obama when he was in the White House bending over and letting the African-American kid pat his head. the African-American child pat his head and say, you know, it's cool that the president has hair like mine. It's the story of the kids in Chicago asking their teacher when she showed them all the past presidents, why are none of them black? And the teacher responding, well, this year our senator's running and he's black. He might be the first black president. And that young senator's name was Barack Obama. And he did become the first black president of the United States. I think that that's the aspect that we forget, that it's looking at that person, right? It's seeing that person and being able to say, hey, when I look in the mirror, I can see her and she can see me. We look similar. She has my skin tone. You know, she has my eyes, our noses are similar in shape because of the fact that we share some blood. And I think that that's the thing that's more important than what we're going to consider her societally. It's the fact that she represents people.
Right.
Yeah. And if I may,
go ahead, Vern.
So my point was here, actually, scientifically, historically speaking, a lot of our African-Americans today have white ancestors for one reason and one reason alone. Because white slave owners often raped African-American women. How, not even considering the fact that that happened continually, a lot of African-Americans have that ancestry. And so the question here, guys, is this. Does having a white ancestor through that kind of means probably make her less black? That's the question we have to ask ourselves as Americans. And second of all, why does that matter? Why did George Floyd having all those things in his background matter? It's things like that which kind of dilute the actual success story of Kamala Harris. It doesn't matter what her ancestors did. It doesn't matter what that dude in Alabama, if his ancestor, his great-great-great-grandpappy was a slave owner. It doesn't matter. I'll love you just the way you are, right? I don't care about that kind of stuff. It is just diluting the victory of the vice president. And I think that to move on, we have to consider just working together. And saying stuff like that just impedes and creates a barrier to compromise. I've been talking about compromise so much. I think we need it. I think the way we achieve it is by not shaming each other with these false allegations. These unnecessary allegations that we shouldn't consider. Damien talked about this. Let's not consider the fact that Trump's having these false allegations of voter fraud in the nation. Let's not consider that. It doesn't deserve our attention. I think this does not deserve our attention, following that same principle.
Mm-hmm. I think that regardless of what you feel about or what anyone feels about Kamala Harris and her policies or whatnot, or just what her past record as a lawyer in California, I think that young women and young girls all across this nation are going to look up to her, regardless of, you know, your age or your race or your sexuality or your body shape. I think all women in this country are going to look up to her and they're going to be like, wow, a woman got up there. That is a heartbeat away from the presidency. I think that
literally
is it safe?
Yeah, literally
this presidency might be maybe half a heartbeat away from
that.
Yeah. A delayed heartbeat.
Whichever way you look at it.
I think it's safe to say in the next 16 years we'll have a female president.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh,
I would
definitely
like for it to be Nikki Haley, but, you know, that's that's my personal opinion.
I think it should be AOC.
Please, no.
I was just that was just a joke.
We all have opinions, that's not a good one. That was a joke.
I promise, that was a joke.
A lot of jokes being made here, guys. Yeah. A lot of jokes.
But let's talk about it. Let's talk about AOC.
Let's talk about the joke of the past 4 years.
Oh, shit. God damn. Man, it's just it's good to be able to sit here and just kind of laugh. I think that the the American flag. Go ahead. No. Go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We had so many jokes happening today. I think that this was one of our most informal, chill podcasts and kind of one of the most chill, informal weeks for Americans. I think as we go on, we have a long, long, long journey ahead. 1,460 days of a Biden presidency to look out for, report, cover, and everything like that. I think the Polititeen is going to be in for the ride of its life, covering this content. And whenever we get a Biden misfall, a Biden pitfall, we're going to call Will Carroll, we're going to call Patrick Butler, we're going to call Brad Licht, and whatever other conservative correspondents that we have on for a discussion about the issues. But I think that we have to come out and today not think about 2024, not think about 2028, not think about 2021. Let's think about right now, right here, and how happy we are to be Americans under a same flag, under a singular set of values that we all adhere to, under a flag that promotes honesty, that promotes truth, that promotes patriotism, and that just, you know, it makes me proud. You saw Van Jones on CNN crying.
That's what I was gonna say. I don't know if you guys
saw that, yeah. But he was, I think, on the same wavelength, man. I think that he was on CNN and he was crying about how this day represents something that I've been waiting for. I'm not quoting him, but he was talking about how his daughter's proud to be an American. He's proud to be an American and how his values were upheld. I think that Americans were held to a higher standard. We have to stop promoting bigotry, racism, hatred, lying. This is a victory for America.
Yeah. Just to go back to this this conversation that we've been having over the past 4 years, there's been a lot of pain, and you know, it's a gunshot, and we put a Band-Aid over it. We still have a lot of progress to make, but you know, over the past 4 years, there's been a lot of pain. I've seen racist remarks towards myself by others towards me become more commonplace, more so than beforehand. I've seen divisive rhetoric be spread like never before, and you know, obviously we've had a young experience here, but the pain has been felt, I think, by many Americans, and half the country exhaled with the simple word of projected, right? You know, the projected president of the United States of America, or projects, and half the country exhaled, and this weight has been taken off our back, and you know, you can look at it in whatever way. You can say that it's corny, but at the end of the day, there's been a lot of pressure taken off the, you know, our backs. It's as a minority here speaking, and I'm sure that a lot of you can relate to this. You know, you gotta dress up nice to make sure that you put the best foot forward, because you don't want to be just seen as another basic minority just trying to take advantage of whatever system. You've had to deal with these pressures, you know, and I'm talking to my LGBTQ brothers and sisters as well, and anyone that feels that they are a minority here in this country, disabled people. You know, we saw Joe Biden acknowledge even disabled people in his victory speech. This is a time for change. And I was going to go on and say, you know, I've been kneeling for the Pledge of Allegiance, because Pledge of Allegiance says words that I don't think resemble what the flag stood for. It said, liberty and justice for all. And I think that in this nation, over the past couple months, we have seen that liberty and justice for all has not been the standard that we have been held to. And I don't necessarily know if Joe Biden is going to answer that standard. And I'm not going to stop kneeling until that standard has been met. But it feels like I've made one step closer to standing up and to being able to be proud of that national anthem. Because as far as I'm concerned, I cannot recite an allegiance to a flag that does not provide liberty and justice for all. And I will stride as an American to make sure that that standard can be met, and that one day with confidence, I can say that I do pledge allegiance to an America that is one nation, unified, that offers those equal opportunities, regardless of your race, religion, color, creed, sexual orientation, your identity, the way that you think, your opinion on politics, whether you're conservative, Democrat, voted blue or red, it does not matter. And until that day comes, you know, I will continue to advocate for liberty and justice for all. And I think that the beautiful thing was that over this past week, we saw liberty and justice for all take a stand. We saw democracy take a stand. We saw the representation of what it means to be an American, what it means to be a true patriot take a stand. 75 million Americans made their voices heard. 145 million Americans made their voices heard. But 75 million Americans that stood up, I think, stood up for principles, stood up for values, and took pressure and let us exhale for a little bit, because, you know, the phrase "I can't breathe" wasn't just referring to George Floyd. I think a lot of minorities felt that way over the past 4 years. And it's a moment to exhale, but it's not a moment to rest. We have to keep moving forward. We have to keep advocating for what's right. This is a step in the right direction, but we can make sure that we don't take 3 steps back. We got to take 10 forward.
Yeah. And for all of us who said, all of our minorities, all of our Americans who said, "I can't breathe," breathe a breath of fresh air today and get back to work.
Absolutely.
For what you believe in. All right, guys. That's the end of Political Team number 52. Thank you guys so much for joining us, and we'll see you on Friday.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, be sure to go check out our website. That's polititeam.com. Go check out our Instagram and our Twitter, both at Polititeam Show. We had another amazing episode here today. I want to thank Varun. I want to thank Will. I want to thank Patrick for the amazing insight, adding to conversation, giving me a different perspective, as you guys tend to do each and every time we come on and record. Those are episodes on Monday and Friday that you guys can come check out. So, you know, the next episode. Go for it, Will.
You know, I wanted to add this a little bit earlier, but there's two things on my mind that kind of related, kind of not. One of them's the first one. I wanted to mention it on here earlier this morning. Is today the 9th or
it would have been the 8th yesterday.
Would have been the 8th yesterday. Yeah. So on the morning of the 8th, we learned that Alex Trebek was the host of Jeopardy. He passed away at the age of 80 due to pancreatic cancer. And I think that, you know, this isn't really related to anything we were talking about, but I think it's important to bring up because he was a American TV icon, and I think that a lot of people, including myself, are really mourning his loss. Especially I had a grandma who she would always come down and she'd always watch Jeopardy every night. And then I remember being, you know, too young to even understand what the questions were. And I'm sitting there and watching with her. And that's always something I'm going to have forever. So I think that, you know, Alex Trebek's passing was kind of like, it meant a lot to me. So I think all of our hearts go out to his family. And yeah, I mean, it's just heartbreaking to find out.
Yeah, our hearts go out to the Americans that are grieving, you know, his loss. An amazing life. And you know, he brought entertainment to millions of Americans, and he put a smile, I think, on a lot of people's faces.
Look, his legacy will be amazing, guys. Let's make his legacy last, and let's remember him for our entire lives, guys.
Right. Absolutely. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for tuning into another episode of Polititeam. Be sure, again, to check out our socials, as I had mentioned. Check out our website, polititeam.com. And thank you guys so much for watching. Goodbye.
Hello, 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 everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Polititeam Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/Polititeam Podcast for more exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. That is, once again, www.patreon.com/Polititeam Podcast. I'm going to make it a jingle when I grow up. It is www.patreon.com/Polititeam Podcast. No, I'm just kidding, you guys. But definitely visit www.polititeampodcast.com. For more amazing content from myself, Damien, our team, our amazing artwork head, and our sponsors over at Polititeam. And once again, thank you so much for watching today's episode. Thank you to my co-host, Damien Galvin, for an amazing conversation. My friend, I do appreciate your input, as always. And that said, have a great rest of your weekend. Chime in for the next episode, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation.